Examining Titus's triumphal procession as it truly happened, seeing in our mind's eye this old Torah being abused in the streets of Rome, allows us to understand that Titus and Vespasian were exquisitely aware that it was not only the people of Judea that was now being sent into exile. Terrible damage had been wrought not only to Judea, but to the observance of Judaism. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 97, The Parade and the Temple. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. For one visiting Rome today, the best way to ponder the parade of a triumphant Titus returning from the destruction of Jerusalem is to begin at the Capitoline Museum. Capitoline Hill, one of the seven hills of Rome, was seen by ancient Romans as its most important. It was on this hill that the Temple to Jupiter was built, which served, as many note, as the Acropolis of Rome. Today, along with several other buildings, Capitoline Hill houses a museum with thousands of years of archaeological artifacts, including the bus of Vespasian and Titus, the ones who would have celebrated the bringing of the temple treasures into the capital of their empire. But there was one item at that parade, probably taken from the temple, that allows us to understand why, in the end, the Rome of Vespasian and Titus are artifacts in the Capitoline Museum today, while Judaism and Jewish Jerusalem lives and endures. While still in Jerusalem, Titus promised a captive rebel Kohen, priest, that he would be allowed to live in exchange for revealing the location of the temple treasures. Josephus tells us about this Kohen, quote, "Upon his having security given him by the oath of Caesar, that he should be preserved, upon condition that he should deliver to him certain of the precious things that had been reposited in the temple, came out of it, and delivered him from the wall of the holy house, two candlesticks, like to those that lay in the holy house, with tables and cisterns and vials, all made of solid gold and very heavy. He also delivered to him the veils and the garments with the precious stones, and a great number of other precious vessels that belonged to their sacred worship. The treasurer of the temple also, whose name was Phinehas, was seized on and showed Titus the coats and girdles of the priests, with a great quantity of purple and scarlet, which were there reposited for the uses of the veil, as also a great deal of cinnamon and cassia, with a large quantity of other sweet spices, which used to be mixed together and offered as incense to God every day. A great many other treasures were also delivered to him, with sacred ornaments of the temple, not a few, which things thus delivered to Titus obtained of him for this man the same pardon that he had allowed to such as deserted of their own accord." End quote. The passage has attracted the fascination of many because it reveals that there was more than one menorah held by the priests of the temple, that several copies of the candelabra had been made, a fact that is brought up in discussing the image of the menorah on the Arch of Titus. But the passage is also interesting because of the reference to a treasurer in the temple named Phinehas, Pinchas, who showed Titus the glorious clothing of the priesthood. In the Talmud, the chamber of the temple in which the clothing of the priests were kept is called Lishkat Pinchat HaMalbush, the chamber of Phinehas, the clothier, a striking connection to Josephus' account. It was the temple treasures taken by Titus that would serve as the foundation of the parade of the Romans returning to their city. As we've previously explained, citing the historian Martin Goodman, Vespasian's resume was somewhat thin before the conquest of Judea, and advertising the temple's destruction and the defeat of the Jews became central to advertising the achievements of his family. Thus, Josephus describes Titus's triumphant return to Rome by giving us an account of his parade into the city, one that was designed to display not only the wealth acquired, but also the viciousness with which the conquered had been treated. The parade consisted of elaborately designed moving stages, but the portrayals on these stages were somewhat different from a modern float. They were reenactments of battles, celebrations of the Roman wreaking of havoc and death. Josephus writes, quote, "But nothing in the procession excited so much astonishment as the structure of the moving stages. Indeed, their massiveness afforded ground for alarm and misgivings as to their stability, many of them being three or four stories high, while the magnificence of the fabric was a source at once of delight and amazement. For many were enveloped in tapestries interwoven with gold, and all had a framework of gold and wrought ivory. The war was shown by numerous representations in separate sections, affording a very vivid picture of its episodes. Here was to be seen a prosperous country devastated, there whole battalions of the enemy slaughtered, here a party in flight, there others led into captivity, walls of surpassing compass demolished by engines, strong fortresses overpowered, cities with well-mannered defenses completely mastered, and an army pouring within the ramparts, an area all deluged with blood, the hands of those incapable of resistance raised in supplication, temples set on fire, houses pulled down over their owners' heads, and, after general desolation and woe, rivers flowing, not over a cultivated land nor supplying drink to man and beast, but across a country still on every side, in flames." End quote. This celebration of Roman power unfolded in the Forum and in Rome at large. So why, you might ask, did I begin this episode by stating that it is important to ponder the parade in Rome today while standing on Capitoline Hill, looking out at the Forum? The answer is that Titus triumphantly entered the city elsewhere, but was heading to Capitoline Hill, because there, Shimon bar Giora, one of the leaders of the Jewish revolution against Rome, was executed. By proceeding from the city to the Capitoline Temple, Rome sought to emphasize that theirs was a victory not only for Rome, but also for their pagan faith. They were saying that it was a victory for Jupiter. Today, one can stand on a balcony in the Capitoline Museum, looking down on the Forum. One is gazing on where the parade placed, but one is standing where it finished. One realizes from the Capitoline Museum that it is there, on Capitoline Hill, where our conquerors celebrated what they saw as a triumph of the Roman gods over the God of the Jews. Reflecting back on that moment, we ask ourselves, how could the Jews themselves have borne it? How did they endure? What did it mean to be a Jew as the Romans celebrated, as an arch ultimately rose, proclaiming Jewry's defeat, as the Colosseum came into being, in the face of their unbearable loss, in the face of Roman mockery? How did Jews move forward? The answer, oddly enough, can be found, perhaps, in the parade itself. Titus followed the floats with the vessels of the temple, exhibiting all that he had acquired, and saving what he believed to be the most important artifact for last. Josephus writes what he witnessed, describing not only the floats, but the treasures that followed. Quote, "On the top of every one of these pageants was placed the commander of the city that was taken, and the manner wherein he was taken. Moreover, there followed those pageants a great number of ships, and for the other spoils they were carried in great plenty. But those that were taken in the temple of Jerusalem, they made the greatest figure of them all, that is, the golden table of the weight of many talents, the candlestick also that was made of gold, though its construction were now changed from that which we made use of." And then Josephus adds, "The last of all the spoils was carried the law of the Jews." End quote. The star of the show, it appears, was a Torah scroll. The presence of this Torah in the parade, as Martin Goodman notes, highlighted for the Romans that this, for them, was a victory not only over Judea, but also Judaism. What was this Torah? It is logical to assume that it was not merely a scroll stolen from some synagogue in Jerusalem, but that, like all the other objects in this procession, this copy of the law had been taken from the temple itself. And this is intriguing because, as I once reflected in commentary, the Mishnah and the Talmud make several references to a very valuable version of the Torah that was kept in the courtyard of the temple. Various versions of Talmudic text refer in slightly different ways to this specific scroll. Some call it the Sefer Azara, the courtyard scroll, and some have a slightly different word with similar spelling, Sefer Ezra, the Torah scroll that had been written by Ezra the scribe, a name that signifies that the scroll was considered quite old and a source for any textual questions that arose. It's reasonable to suggest then that the Torah that was taken captive and paraded through Rome was the most important Torah that was then in the possession of the Jewish people. This Torah was kept in the temple as a symbol of Jewish chosenness. Josephus further tells us that, though the menorah and other golden vessels were displayed in an edifice that we will discuss in our next episode, a museum of sorts that the Romans called the Temple of Peace, those treasures were seen by Titus and Vespasian as secondary spoils. The most important objects for the temple were kept elsewhere. Thus Josephus adds about Vespasian, quote, "But still he gave order that they should lay up their law and the purple veils of the holy place in the royal palace itself and keep them there," end quote. The menorah was put on display, but the Torah scroll was kept by Vespasian. The Roman emperor seemed to know that his greatest victory was not the capture of Judea. His legacy was, first and foremost, dealing a terrible blow to the Jewish faith. No longer would the high priest represent the people of Israel and beseech God on behalf of his people on the Day of Atonement. No longer would the Levites sing psalms in the temple court. No longer would Israelites from all over the world come to the temple in Jerusalem during festivals to reforge a relationship with the God of Abraham. Examining Titus's triumphal procession as it truly happened, seeing in our mind's eye this old Torah being abused in the streets of Rome, allows us to understand that Titus and Vespasian were exquisitely aware that it was not only the people of Judea that was now being sent into exile. Terrible damage had been wrought not only to Judea, but to the observance of Judaism. The Torah itself, as it were, was being sent into exile. But here is the twist, which Vespasian did not foresee. The emperor assumed that in capturing the sacred Torah of the temple, he had ended Judaism. But in the end, the words of the Torah would be rewritten by Jews on scroll after scroll and studied year after year with so much love so that Jews and Judaism would survive, with Jews ultimately returning to Jerusalem as well. Vespasian was right in his assumption that the Torah was the truest treasure, but he wrongly assumed that Torah Judaism had come to an end. In fact, the Torah would be the very source of Jewish endurance, and today one does not need to be Jewish in order to see that. As I often cite, it was several years ago that then-Archbishop of Philadelphia, Charles Chaput, visited the Beit Midrash, the study hall of Yeshiva University, and then recounted that experience to his own cathedral on Sunday. Chaput said, quote, "I saw in the lives of those Jewish students the incredible durability of God's promises and God's word. Despite centuries of persecution, exile, dispersion, and even apostasy, the Jewish people continue to exist because their covenant with God is alive and permanent. God's word is the organizing principle of their identity. It's the foundation and glue of their relationship with one another, with their past and with their future. And the more faithful they are to God's word, the more certain they can be of their survival." So Archbishop Chaput said, and I couldn't have said it better myself. Vespasian assumed that the parading of the Torah through Rome meant that the story of Judaism was coming to an end. But in fact, the sacred scrolls signified that the story of Judaism, the Jews, and therefore of Jerusalem, was only getting started. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.